Sure.
Hi, it's TJ Murphy, editor of Lava Magazine. Thanks for joining us today. And back on the podcast, an author, a speaker, an extremely insightful triathlete and thinker, Wayne Kurtz. First of all, let me just mention right off the bat, Wayne's website where you can learn all about him is wayne-kurtz.com. Do I have that correct, Wayne? Is that right?
You got right, TJ, yeah. Okay. Wayne-Kurtz.
And I'll have that in the show notes as well. But as folks may know, Wayne's primary focus for quite a long time now has been in the ultra universe of triathlon and running. And he's in this remarkable part of triathlon that Wayne, and welcome again to the show. Great to talk with you. And I should mention another thing. He's got a new book that's out, available now. Is it? Am I right on that, Wayne?
Yeah, TJ, it is available now. It's called It's All About the DECA. Ebook is up now, and the soft copies will be out in about 2 weeks. So the first part of October, they should be ready, the soft copies.
Right. It's All About the DECA, Fearless Exploration Through 1,406 Miles, and that subtitle tells you a lot. The what's really cool, Wayne, and you've got a number of books, but I this will be a book that if I were having a conversation with someone and they've done 5 Ironmans, and that's how many I've done, and they're like, well, you know, I can do an Ironman. I figured that out. Like, I've got a couple of choices. I can just keep doing them, or I can try to do it faster. I think one neat thing is to travel and go see different parts of the world and be part of the global community. But I think, and we were talking about this a little bit before, and I'm going to also reference a recent column by a professional triathlete, Jordan Rapp, in Lava Magazine, who just recently did the Norseman. He talked about how the driving force of triathlon from the beginning has always been about entering a race that you're not quite sure you can do, and that there's just like this, there's some magic there, and fear, and obviously the ultra triathlon world, and we're talking about double iron length races, triple, the DECA, the Venti, some things that you know that world well, and I have a feeling that I think there's this awareness of it, but could you just for starters, if we wouldn't mind kind of like going through your race biography here, like what kind of races have you done that sort of showcase who you are as a triathlete?
Sure, TJ. And I guess the just general background, this is, what is this, year 31 of racing now, triathlons and all the various running races and bike races. So going through the journey, I'd say the last 9 to 10 years has been fully focused. The main A races for the year for me have been the ultra triathlons, and that consists of the double iron, so just double the distance. The quintuple is the other one, which is 5. But the signature one, I think, that has been, and I can say this honestly, the most life-changing and impactful for getting around that fear factor. And every time I sign up for one, it doesn't matter how many times I've done it, you just never know what's going to happen, is the DECA. And that's the one because of the length of the race. It's more than 2 days. It's more than 4 days. Mm-hmm. You're out for up to 2 weeks. So I've spent most of the last, you know, 8, 9, 10 years focused on that as the main race. And, you know, and again, the whole goal of the book was to try to at least illustrate that it's possible to do the race. It gets you kind of outside of the box to a certain degree. It's very different, but a lot happens in a 10 to 14 day event. You've seen it live before, so you know.
Yeah.
And hopefully with some of this, more people will join. And we've seen, you know, more individuals consider it and actually race this year. Not because of me, but just the word, people are hearing the word DECA, which is kind of neat.
Yeah, and just for clarification, if someone's listening to this and they haven't quite read about it or heard about it, but when we're talking DECA Iron, that's 10 times the Ironman distance, but there's actually a couple of different versions. There's, as you mentioned, the classic version and then the 1 times 10. And so perhaps you can kind of define that for us.
Yeah. So the and it's interesting. The last, if you go back the last 5 years, the vast majority of the DECAs have been in the 1x10 format. So it's an Ironman a day, 2.4 mile swim, 112 mile bike, 26.2 mile run. And you do the Ironman every day for 10 days. And you have a 24-hour period of time to finish the Ironman. And that sounds like a lot of time, and it should be. But when things go wrong, you can burn through 24 hours quickly.
Yeah.
So that's the one version. The reason there's been more of a prevalence the last 4 or 5 years is it's just easier to manage for race directors. You're not committing as much time that's required and volunteers and everything as the Classic. And the Classic was the original, going back to 1992, first race held in Monterrey, Mexico. There was no time limit, but they had this crazy idea. Let's do continuously 10 Ironmans, and it's all, you do all the swim first. So a 24-mile swim, then a 1,120-mile bike, and then a 262-mile run, and the clock keeps going.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the first version. Most of the older, experienced athletes, and even to a certain degree, I think a lot of the new athletes who've considered the DECA, they view that as the one to do. Between the two, everyone has their differences of opinions. I've got the statistics, and I put them in the book. About 55% is the finish rate for the 1x10, and it's north of, I think it's 77 or 78% finish the Classic. Because you, in the Classic, you get 14 days to finish. In the 1x10, you got 10 days, and you can't have a bad day,
right,
or you're getting almost no sleep. So it's interesting. I've done both versions of it, and it's neat to see the dynamics. At least there's a conversation about, you know, what's tougher. I mean, you go back 5 years ago, no one even talked about the DECA. So, you know, or yeah, even
right.
It's crazy people. So that's really the difference between the two. So continuous versus the 1x10.
Yeah. And well, the one that I was able to watch and write about was a Classic held in Monterey. And you're doing one of these in pretty soon, right? It's in Mexico. Am I correct?
Yes. Yeah. They changed the location, TJ. So it's now no longer in Monterey. It's in Leon. So it's about 6 hours north of kind of Mexico City. So you're up a ways, central Mexico. And it's in 3 weeks, I guess. 3 weeks, October 15th, it starts.
Have you raced there before? Do you know the course?
Yeah, I did the 1x10 there 2 years ago. But this will be the first time doing the Classic on this course. So it should be good. It's a nice, it's at altitude, though. Very different.
Oh, wow.
Monterey, where it, I think it's, oh, it's at 5,000 or 6,000 feet. I didn't notice
like
it.
Like Boulder.
It's like Boulder. It is. Yeah. Like you're in Colorado. And I know some athletes, especially some of the Europeans, felt it. For some reason, I didn't. It's just the dryness is the big change for me being from Pittsburgh, where it's more humid. You go to Mexico at that time, and it's dry at the West Coast. So that was the only challenge. But the course is flat. I mean, everything else is flat.
But here you go. Perfect opportunity. You don't have to worry about acclimatizing to altitude because you can do it during the race.
Honestly, you got 2 weeks. Did you have 2 weeks to do it?
I really think that that you know, checking your hemoglobin levels at the beginning and then the end might be kind of fascinating. I think that typically you'd expect all the blood cell damage, you know, but you might actually your hematocrit might go up in this event.
It could be. I can tell you one thing, though. Everyone, in no matter what decade is, you do the before and after pictures. It's like any long race. It's incredible. When you get over 5-6 days, the impact of what changes on the body and the look.
Yeah.
I mean, you look so much different in 14 days versus, you know, day one. It is kind of amazing when you look at it.
Yeah, my that year that I was with Inside Triathlon at the time, but we covered the Monterey Classic. My brother, who's a very good photographer, came and shot it. And it's one thing to watch it. You're watching it. You're definitely getting a very deep impression of what's happening out there. You know, any time around the clock, I would make a point of going out at 3 a.m. to watch to see who was, you know, getting some laps on the bike in. And but the pictures really caught what you're talking about. Like there's and I, this goes back to your book that you know, there and the point of why somebody might do this, and the purpose is actually something you talk about in It's All About the Deca, and you know, the why you're out there, because you go through an experience where you're going to learn about yourself. And then this is going to relate to the first time triathlete doing their first sprint triathlon, right? But this is a whole nother dimension. And, you also talk about, the value of experience and, you know, how to handle this in a psychological way. And, perhaps you could, like if someone were to chat with you, Wayne, at a cocktail party and say, "Hey, I'm a triathlete. Could you give me some pointers on how I can, you know," and I know this is what your book's about. I would recommend your book as a way to really kind of drill down to this. But you're saying I could really do one of these decas or triples, or how would I go about it? And what's kind of what's your elevator pitch on that?
Yeah, I guess the and we like the sales pitch because I said that. The folks that are in the ultra tri space, once we get someone to cross over, we don't want to let them go. We're all getting older, so we want to try to keep people in the sport. I think that the best way to look at this is you have to take a viewpoint individually and say what is reasonable related to my time, life, job, business. Is it realistic for me to be able to put the time that's required in to do the race? And number two, how do I build in my brain the mental capacity of being able to do 1,000 loops on a bike around the little circuit, you know, day by day? And I say that two ways. I mean, the sales pitch is, or elevator pitch is, it, number one, it will change your life forever. I say that to every single person, everyone who has ever finished the deca, it does, because it provides crossover into a lot of aspects of life. But the first component is you got to balance it. And the thing that I think most individuals come into it with is, oh my God, I mean, it's so overwhelming to think about the distances of it. My God, what is the training requirements? And I've got the kids and I've got family and I've got community and all the other responsibilities and work and on and on. Honestly, the time period to train for it is not that much more dramatic than training for an Ironman, honestly. Mm-hmm. You hear enough individuals that will train for an Ironman and they're training 20 hours a week, full-time job, kids, family, spouses involved, kids in all the activities. And if you look at the statistics, TJ, it's interesting. I think I put it in the book at one point. The average DECA athlete, and I interviewed 21 veteran DECA athletes for the book, throughout the world, just to get their perspective on it. And the average was about 14 to 16 hours a week of training. It's not unbelievable.
Right.
So the key is, more than anything else, is if you can maintain consistency for a period of time of between, you know, depending on your fitness level, 2.5 to 3 months, you can get yourself ready for it because you have enough time to finish the classic in the cutoff times. I mean, most can. I mean, that's why the finish rate's higher. You know, once you get through the swim, which is the only challenging cutoff, it's 24 hours. If they're not swimmers, sometimes that's a challenge. The rest of it is you have 336 hours. You can have a bad day. You can sleep through it. You can get yourself through it. But more importantly, it's just trying to balance that schedule and knowing, okay, I've got to do the long ones, but it's not all about going out and doing a 250-mile bike ride.
Yeah.
The challenge is individuals who join the sport on average are closer to the 40 age range. They're like the ultra runners. It's a little bit older of a group, and recovery is as much or more important than the training. Learned that. I think everyone's learned it. And we've seen this change. I mean, every dynamic from listening to Mark Sisson and all the groups about how impactful recovery is. I truly believe that. And you don't need to do 30-hour weeks. You could do a few big weeks, but it's very doable for most individuals. And there is I still say this, and I've done a lot of races and you've seen a lot. There's no finish line like the DECA. Mm-hmm. It is an emotional, like you cannot believe when every athlete, no matter where they are on the loop, stops, tries to get to the finish line to see the person come in. I mean, it's very unique. It is a competitive race environment, but that last lap is the emotions of kind of going through what you went through for the last 13 days or 10 days or whatever it took is really kind of incredible. And it does cross over into life and business. I mean, it has for me. Mm-hmm. You got a situation with a client or a customer and you're dealing with a pain. You just learn how to grind through it. And that's the race. The race is all about grinding. You just keep grinding. Right?
Yeah, you've got it. You mentioned, for example, one of the most important strategies is simply, I think you're talking about mantras, but stay on the bike. Just, stay on the bike, as much as you can. You obviously have to do your maintenance and take care of yourself, take the little naps and eat and whatever. But time, not like the bike is such an enormous part of this event, that if you're sitting off of the sidelines on a chair, you're not making any distance. Even if you're going slow, at least you're grinding your way through the race, to your point.
And if you look, it's interesting. Most individuals, if you look at the bike splits, this for the classic DECA. So the 1,120 mile bike split compared to the 262 mile run split, they're within a handful of hours for most people. They're very close. Yeah. So it's about almost equivalent, depending upon the athlete. So you're grinding kind of through those two. The swim is bad enough. You got to kind of get through the swim on the cutoff for some individuals, but it really is those final two components. And it comes down to the run, like any other triathlon. That last 100 miles of the run is just horrific.
It's one of the things interested me is that even though the swim is time-wise relatively short compared to the rest of what you're facing with the bike and the run, but you make it sound very daunting because in this classic and the 1x10, we're talking about you're completing this in a swimming pool. So we're talking about just the mental ramifications of that it's a beast. Is what I get the impression of, that it's really it's tough.
And it's, and you've done the Ironmans, and I think your audience knows, if you ask most Ironman triathletes, men and women, and yourself, myself as well, if you look at your time during the week of training and you say, what percentage of the week are you spending in the water? Unless they're a professional triathlete, man or woman, the one that's always lacked is the swim, because for most it's, you get through the swim, or even if they're a swimming background person who swam in college, I did, you just don't spend as much time in the water because it's always going to be about that run on the back end of it. The one thing in the DECA Classic, I do think it's crucial to spend a lot of time and up to 30-40% of the weekly training hours swimming. You got to swim. Because just getting used to the shoulder fatigue and knowing what it feels like, you cannot, until you swim in a pool for that many hours, which most people would never do, you lose, for instance, just a few of the simple things that you don't think about. Your fingers get wrinkled, okay, because you're in the water for so long. What happens is after so long, if you don't put any application on, those wrinkles turn into cuts, and it's like paper cuts all over you. The chlorine impact on your tongue is remarkable. You have no taste buds for usually a day and a half after getting out of the swim because the chlorine content is up higher. Mm-hmm. Just because, I'll tell you the truth, no one's getting out of the water to go to the bathroom. Okay? That's the truth. That's right. The truth of every one of the, you don't want to hear it, but the chlorine content's higher just to make sure. So it's challenging from those sides, but I do think we sometimes, as triathletes, we lose the mindset of the benefits of fitness that are gained through swimming. I mean, there's incredible fitness benefits through swimming, and without all the pounding. I mean, you're not pounding yourself to death. Right. So, to your point, I think it's really crucial for the classic DECA. No question, you've got to put time in the pool.
Well, and you sort of touched on an area that I think I can imagine somebody who's 25 and they're like, man, I'm going to do that. And they show up and they've done their training, but they really haven't considered some of these ancillary issues that you talk about in your book. And that is because we're like skin and being as comfortable as possible in the saddle, which at some point you're just not going to be comfortable in the saddle, but there's, you know, feet. I think there's some sort of a sidebar, as I recall, where like the three issues that a lot of people might drop out of a DECA. And it really sounds like there's some low hanging fruit in terms of at least mitigating some of that damage. Could you chat about that a little bit?
Yeah, I think it comes down to putting together a simple, not crazy detailed, race plan. And the race plan will kind of go through, you know, kind of your target ABC goals of where you want to be on each one of the components, knowing you're going to have challenges such as the feet will be a mess. There's no way around it. There isn't even the winners to the person who comes in last place in the DECA. The feet during the 262-mile run are a mess. They are just a mess. So the one thing is learning from what applications work, what things and tips you should do as you face those challenges from feet, the blisters, to the saddle. Mm-hmm. And my opinion is if you're having trouble on day two on the bike where, you know, your butt is not toughened up enough, you didn't train enough on the bike because you just can't, because you'll suffer for 3 days. Mm. But if you get to that, there's plenty of ideas. One is, again, you can put on all the various, you know, anti-friction components, but one that works is an idea I saw from a gentleman who was doing the DECA when I was doing it the first classic time, where he took a second pair of cycling shorts, turned them inside out, and put those over top of his other cycling shorts because he had saddle sores that were so bad. And it does work. I used it in the Trans Am. So when I did the bike race across the country, those tips and the things that you need to be aware of, it becomes difficult. And when it's hard to think, right? Stuff's going awry and you want to just put it off. I don't want to deal with the foot. I don't want to deal with the issue. But that's where I think it's crucial for you to have a good crew. I think crew is important. I talk about it in the book. All the stories about positives and negatives of great crews and bad crewing from the team members. But you also have to make the decisions on your own of what you're going to do when you're facing those issues, having Vaseline or having something at the end of the swim or during the swim for the hands and everything else, but making sure you got something to clean your hands so you don't mess up your goggles. I mean, simple things. But if you put it in a written plan, laminate it, give it to the crew, and then you have, you know, a short version of it just in your brain, or more importantly, take a small index card, put the four or five things that you got to remember to do and stick it in your shirt pocket on the bike and the run. Mm. Even if you don't pull it out, you'll remember it. That's right. Need to start lubing the feet. I got blisters. I better deal with the feet now. I got to change the shoes. All those things related to different shoe sizes, glove sizes. That's one most people don't think about. And I learned this. It's like, you know, the first time I did it was, okay, I'm going to take some cycling gloves. Right. It's just so you don't get your hands too bad. Well, your hands swell by eating all this food. You're eating everything imaginable just to keep calorie content. It's too much salt, whatever, and you swell. Hmm. Well, then you start swelling your hands, and they feel terrible on the handlebars when the gloves are too tight. and you take them off, and then what happens? Your fingertips get numb, you know, and all those things. So it's managing it through your crew and yourself, but most importantly, adhering to some type of basic plan. You got to have a little bit of a plan, I think.
You know, another great section of your book that, from what I witnessed, it was super critical. And that is, and you make that point as well, that the crew. You talk about this has happened. You've seen this happen. The crew abandonment. In other words, the crew actually abandoning the racer.
Yes.
So, and then you've also talked about some of the elite crews that you've seen that were like pit stop crews for a Formula One car event. Could you chat a little bit about that? I found that to be fascinating. Like, it's obviously such an important thing to have a crew that doesn't just baby you. In fact, doesn't like that point was made as well, but is there to help you stay the course and make it to the finish line?
Yeah, I guess a couple things I'm teaching there. You know, I put some examples of the good crewing and bad crewing. And one of the challenges when you have a race this long, just like Ram, I think a little different than Badwater. Badwater, you know, when you're doing that race, it's only a couple days. But when you're going out over a week, crewing always involves drama. And the key is to eliminate as much drama as possible. Knowing the crew ahead of time is kind of key. If they're good friends or colleagues or individuals who understand, it could be a spouse. And to the point of not babying, that's the one thing I've always tried to tell individuals is if you have your spouse there, if there's that nurturing component of a spouse, and you have to kind of get them outside of that because if they've never seen what it looks like, it looks bad. You know, and you know, in most cases, no one's doing any major damage. You know, lifetime injuries aren't a common theme of it. You know, you might get some issues, but most of the things will go away. So I think in crewing, it's not babying the athlete is key. It's not having too many crew people, which goes the other way. Because if you have too many crew members, each is taking a different responsibility. And a lot of times, I hate to say it, it starts to become about them. And I don't want that to come across negatively, but I have seen this. And when we were in Italy at the Triple Deca, there was so much crew drama, it was mind-boggling. So there, you know, that's, and it's not all the time by any means, but it's trying to find the right personalities, the right forcefulness of a personality that kind of matches yours when you're down. And the downs are where you need the crew. When you're falling apart, and they don't last long. It's in nine times out of 10, you ask any crew individual, especially my super crew, Rick. I mean, I've used Rick forever. And Rick comes to all of my events on the back end when it gets bad. And nine times out of 10, when people are suffering or I'm suffering, it's a lack of calories. The easiest way to get around that is just force food. Don't tell the athlete, would you like this? How about, no, you just force it to them. You're going to eat this. That's it. Put it down. 90% of the time, it cures most things when you're really feeling bad energy-wise. A crew is helpful from every aspect of managing the stuff. And what I mean the stuff is when you're doing the 1x10 DECA, it means you're doing the swim, bike, run every single day. And think about the amount of stuff
we
do to an Ironman race. You have to keep that organized every single day. And it's probably one of the biggest skills that you need to have in a crew. Someone who's organized, take a little bit of leadership. They all should leave their egos at home, just like the athlete, right? Because as soon as they go in with egos, it goes the wrong way. And it's mainly about trying to balance that to a certain degree. And you know, in most cases, as you saw when we were in Monterey during the DECA, many times when a crew is sleeping and their athlete is going around the circles, the other crews, and the great thing about the ultra triathlon space and the family is the other crews will help. They will always pitch in. You know what? Yeah. Going to sleep, give him bottles, give her bottles, switch it back and forth. And I have to say, over the years doing these things, and I love them. I really love the race. The most amazing thing has always been the people. And it has been the crews, not only the athletes, I love the athletes, but families and the crews, because you always remember, you know what, I had DECA shin. I read about this in the book. It's the most common injury. And the first time I got it, it was like, oh my God, am I not going to be able to make this? First time I ever thought about, okay, I might not finish. And thank God the crews were there. We'll fix it. We'll fix it. It's going to be a 9-hour marathon. You're going to barely be able to walk, but you'll be able to recover in 2 days. Without the crew, your mind goes the wrong way. So it's just some examples. But being tough with the athlete and encouraging is that fine balance. You got to kind of balance it, right? And keep them moving. That's the other number one goal. Keep the athlete moving. That's crucial.
Yeah, that's spot on. It seems like what I've seen, and I covered Western States once, and I was hanging out at a aid station at Rucky Chucky River Crossing the entire night, and so I saw a lot of runners dropped at that point. Well, no, I shouldn't say a lot, a fair number. It was just tough because it was, you know, 3/4 of the race is behind them, but they're still, you know, another marathon to run essentially, and it's dark, and they got to cross this cold river, and so I really sort of witnessed those good crew members who were able to keep the mental state from taking that dive. And it's actually kind of bends into something I wanted to the whole sports psychology thing. And I think, you know, one of the values of, again, whether it's especially in an ultra triathlon, but in especially for a beginner in a shorter triathlon, or going up to a half Ironman or something like that, there's this, one of the values of doing this is that it spreads throughout your life. And I think you've already kind of referred to that, but this, that the lessons that you learn out there, you talked about how it will change you forever, are going to translate into, this is the ideal anyway, being a better person, being a better spouse, being better at your career, being able to apply these, and I think probably the most valuable thing are these sports psychology type principles where you get through really hard tough passages, through you're getting that crew support, but also perhaps you have some tools, maybe even have this on the index card for how to kind of work your way out of those things in a mental way. Would you? I mean, just knowing who you are and what you kind of represent and talk about, that makes sense to me. That I imagine you agree with that.
I do. And I do think there's a direct crossover into family and to learning balance, because, you know, the challenge with all of these individualized sports is it's all individualized, right? Is it self-centered? I'm spending so much time on this away from other things. And if you do it the right way, you determine balance from family, balance with your work, employment, volunteer work, anything you're doing in the community. And I do think it provides direct crossover when you do. And I only say this, not that an Ironman does as well. I think every one of these various events, or a half Ironman, as you progress. But if you're doing something, for an example, that is going to require a significant commitment.
Right.
Be volunteer, community, whatever, family. When you go for on your own to a certain degree, and day by day keep the persistency of pursuing the goal over 2 weeks, it's dramatic. Mm-hmm. It is. And I have plenty of examples in my own businesses that where it's worked, where, you know, times were bad, revenue was terrible in the business, and they said, okay, we got to kind of grind through this and figure out a way to figure out, you know, in my own businesses, to increase revenue or whatever, increase our profit margins, hire new staff, deal with, you know, individuals, things of that nature, family commitments, whatever else it might be. So it's a long way to answer your question, but I do think it really does have a direct crossover. Not even a question.
Yeah. And, just keeping yourself kind of, feet on the ground, because, these things are ultimately humbling. You know, you're going to get to know yourself better one way or another. There's I actually listened recently to a podcast, by a former, he used to be a Navy SEAL BUDS instructor. He had been in the SEALs for 17 years. He's retired now. He was medically retired. And, it was fascinating to hear him talk, about what they did as BUDS instructors. So BUDS is the, nearly a year-long training program, initial training program for someone who wants to become a SEAL, a Navy SEAL, and one of the toughest components of that is Hell Week, which comes in 4 or 5 weeks into the in BUDS, where they basically go without sleep for 5.5 days, and they're it's very physical. They're constantly being exposed to extreme levels of duress through exercise, cold, holding a log up over their head for endless amounts of time. But the biggest part is the mental part, because these buds instructors are trained to break these guys down. So they know how to, they don't even have to raise their voice. They can get inside their head and get them to think about quitting. And when they start thinking about quitting, it becomes, there's like this downward slope. Like their job is not to get their mind on the right track. So to kind of get to leap to where I want to go here, I think some of these skills, and we're talking about transferring them from your experience at ADECA into, let's say, business, for example, and you're a businessman. One of the things that keeps coming up in conversations I've had and things I've read, and I'd love to hear you chat about this, but that is keeping a mental focus on the things you can control and keeping your mind away from things you can't control. Because being, for example, you're halfway through ADECA, you still got a long way to go. If your mind kind of wanders off into how much longer that's going to be, how long you're going to be uncomfortable, I think you're going to get into this downward spiral mentally where you don't want to be. So it's, you can't control like the next 10 steps you're going to take, or pedal strokes or things like that, or knocking off some of these things on your checklist, like taking care of your gear. Does that sound about right? I'm kind of just lofting that out for you to comment on.
Yeah, it does. And maybe I can give you a example in one of my businesses where this really was applicable. And again, it and everyone is different, but one of my businesses, as you know, I'm in tax, and I've been in the tax and financial services space for 30 years. Okay. So I've been in the same, and I have my own businesses. So tax consulting, financial services, I have an investment management company. And one of the things that, to your point of knowing, okay, I'm only halfway through the race and trying to stay focused and not dealing with the outside distractions of the pull and the mental pull of being pushed different ways in that race, was, we've heard this for years by many advisors, and they would, in management consultants would always say, you know, look at your clients. If you're a business owner, and this was a perfect example of the clients that cost you, even though that the revenue might be high, but cost you so much time and pain where you can't focus on the rest of your business or your team members. And that's like unheard of. Oh my God, I can't fire a client. I can't fire a client. I could never do that. You know, and it's always that concern of, I'm going to lose that revenue and I hope I can make it up somewhere else. But I have to tell you, one of the learning lessons personally for me was that. And, you know, in the lesson was clearly of focus. And that skill was built dramatically in the DECA, that you can't spend too much time on outside distractions, such as, in my example, was a client that was a drain. It was like you go through your clients, and I'd say to myself, I can't believe I'm doing this, but you have to, and you do it the right way. You separate ties, even if it was a long relationship, it's just draining. And it's also like the old theory of, it's like, who do you spend your time with? Negative people or positive people? Not to get on that soapbox, but it's the same thing. It's the focus point.
That's the basics. Yeah.
Yeah. It's built with the race. It is, because, you know, you're halfway, you've got a long way to go. I can't get too many outside distractions because it's hard. And when you're doing the race, like, you know, if you're in business or you're working for someone, you end up having a complete focus and have no idea what's going on in the outside world. And that's not saying that that's what you want to do in your own life and business, but that's what happens in that race. You have no idea what's going on. You
might check. That's right.
But you don't. You're so exhausted. You have no idea.
And, you know, and then just one last sort of word about the sports psychology part that can translate into lots of things. But, and, you know, this, again, this goes to a Ironman racing as well, but it's amplified in something like a 2-week event for sure. And that is how much you can really accomplish. Kind of a mind-boggling amount by just, as you using that word grind, like just keep moving forward and do the right things and, you know, keep your mind in the right place and navigate the ups and the downs, as smartly as you can. You could look up, and I mean that I have not crossed the finish line at Edeka. But that's gotta be kind of at some point afterward when you're sort of absorbing and digesting the experience, it's gotta, especially for people who do one of these things for the first time, you've probably seen some remarkable, reactions.
Yeah. And and I think for most, there's almost, you have a feeling of being so grateful that you have the ability not only personally to do it, but the ability to do it, because it's a big commitment and it requires so many different things to find a fall into place. And it all comes to kind of that ending point. And I think, you know, there's the humility from the athletes who finish it. Almost, I think every single one of them I've ever seen are very humble. And I think that's an important component of finishing it. And there is nothing like it. I mean, if you're not emotional at the end of the finish line of that, it's like the first time someone does their first Ironman. You know, you give that kind of commitment. But when you commit to that many days of the ups and downs, it really, it all comes to kind of an end. And then the secondary component of that is, you think it's bad after an Ironman where you get that like post blues race depression, it's all over. It's brutal. I mean, it's just because you've committed so much into the race, not only the training and the commitments outside, but the race takes so long.
Yeah.
You're beat up mentally. Physically, it takes a while to recover, but it does. It brings you down. It's like, you know, you get that euphoria at the finish line, and then there is that kind of drag. And then the next thing you hear is, you know, there's the new race calendar, and then there's something to kind of come up. But it's like any other triathlete, but it takes a while to recover for it mentally. Physically, yes, but mentally, it's hard to it takes some time. You can't recover for it in 3 weeks. No way.
I imagine the post-race party is a pretty cool thing because you sort of reference in your book and we've talked about before, but the community, and I've seen this in the ultra running world as well. It's just, it's really fascinating to me. People from all walks of life, and there's not that many of them, but they love getting together and with what I've personally witnessed, in the ultra triathlon community, we're talking about a global community, a really interesting bunch of people. And, it must be, you know, getting together at these occasions, whether it's, in Monterey or Italy or, United States, whatever, it must be pretty neat to be able to catch up with your close friends after finishing off one of these things.
It is that family atmosphere, and it's like ultra running, and I love ultra running too. I do the ultra running races as you do, and you're around the space. It is that same type of vibe. I mean, honestly, and you've got people from all different types of backgrounds, and when you get the international component, which I don't see as much in ultra running in the U.S., but we do have plenty of international folks, especially like, for instance, at Badwater or even Western States, mm-hmm. for that matter, which you get more international. You get differences of perspectives. You're racing for so long, so many days. There are times when you're chatting. I mean, it is. I mean, it's so long of a race.
That's right.
You're on the bike, you can't draft, or you're on the run, you're not drafting, and you're really not going that fast. But you get to really meet some unique personalities, unique perspectives, and you can imagine what we talk about. We always hit the same things, right? Same themes. We got to talk politics because that's going to come up in about 5 minutes in every conversation. The other that is always interesting is, especially from our great European friends, the discussion always comes up on football. So why is it, and this is the things we talk about, you know, you're discussing during one of these races. So why does American football, you can use your hands? Isn't it supposed to, it's called football. You know, how many times I've heard that over the last 10 years. So it's, and those things are memorable, and it is that family atmosphere that keeps me coming back. And I can tell you from most of the ultra triathletes that I know, they're the same way. I mean, it's always great seeing everyone when you come back to it year after year. And, you know, in this year in Mexico, probably the legend and the guy who has done more for this sport than anyone is Guy Rosset, who you know the name Guy.
Yeah, and this
will be Guy's, I think, final DECA. He has done 10. He's done something like, I don't know how many, 500 Ironmans or something, some crazy, 200 double Ironmans. The numbers are staggering. And he's the most genuine, you know, humble man there is.
He's from France, is that right?
France, yes. And TJ, well, I got to tell you, you know, Dee's in the 60s now.
Yeah.
But come race day, I just love it. I mean, it's all out. I mean, it's great post-race, pre-race. We chat and laugh. But come race day, that's what I just love about the sport, is it's a timed event. It's not a self-supported journey, nothing against that. But it is a race, and everyone is there to either race against themselves or competitors, and there's that spirit. And it's always great to see, especially when Guy comes and some of the other athletes have been doing it for so long. You know, those are the memories I'll take forever. I mean, I think anyone who does the race will always remember the people way more than the race. You always will remember the race directors, the volunteers, the crews, the other athletes, and the post-race celebration is great. I mean, it always, especially in Mexico, it's always a good time in Mexico.
That's kind of it, you know, racing. Like, you can be 14 miles behind somebody and you're like, you know what? I'm getting them. I'm right.
You know what, TJ? You can make up time. Think about it. You have 262 miles a run. If you're like a slow runner like I am, you know, I'm not any speedy runner, but if you're persistent, you can catch people in a 262 mile run. Absolutely can catch people. So there's lots of time to make up.
Well, again, the title of the book is, it's all about the DECA, Fearless Exploration Through 1,406 Miles. I've been talking with author and veteran ultra runner and triathlete Wayne Kurtz. And just to give you kind of, give listeners a little bit of an overview, the book is definitely a solid manual for anybody who wants to think about or actually commit to attempting one of these races or the progression toward a DECA. And he's got some great stuff on the history of the race, some interesting statistics that have been compiled alongside the racing there and the different versions of the race, and also just great tips, tactics, and things that will, I don't know, if somebody's getting into this, this book will probably save the reader all sorts of heartache and frustration that can come from making serial errors that can cost a lot in terms of discomfort, pain, and psychological personal warfare. But it's a great read, and I'll have a link to Wayne's book. And Wayne, thanks so much. And Wayne and I were talking about a little bit before, in an early issue, 2018 of Lava, we're going to do a really solid section on a kind of giving readers an idea of this emerging and growing sector of triathlon, who's driving it and what kind of opportunities are out there. So that, you know, people who are interested in looking for that, that challenge, that next race that they're not quite sure if they can finish or not. We definitely have something there waiting for them. Right, Wayne?
Absolutely. We'll make sure. And, just the last component of that is, if everything goes according to plan as we are right now, November 2018 in New Orleans, DECA in the U.S., both versions. Wow. So we're pretty close to getting it confirmed. It would be the first weekend of November and really the first time in the lower 48 we've had a DECA. There was one in Hawaii back in the, I think it was like 2004. I can't remember the exact year, but this will be, and our expectation is a big, big fun event. That's the goal.
And is Steve Kirby
yes,
kind of the major force behind this?
Yeah, Steve and I will be working on it. We have been diligent going back and forth to New Orleans, and we've got the pool reserved, confirmed. We will be using the lake for the 1x10. We will have the quintuple, and we just are now getting final approval of the course, and it'll be a closed-in course. So that's the, you know, it's been a big journey for us. We've been trying for years. It's very hard to find a venue. But fingers crossed, hopefully we can pull this off. In November next year, we'll have the first big official DECA in the U.S.
Well, I look forward to hopefully announcing that it's on. That'll be super cool. And congratulations on all these things. And thanks for being such a positive spirit and voice in the sport. It's always fun talking with you, Wayne.
Great. Thanks, TJ. Always fun catching up.
Okay. Thanks a lot.